you have like very early steps. That means understanding the R&D part, understanding your drugs, how it works, the mechanism of action behind. But once you've done that, you have also other steps like going into testing those drugs on animals and going into clinicals and then manufacture these drugs. So this is a huge process from like the idea up to these drugs going into the market and actually treating patients. So what we do at Deep Life is really a very tiny bit of the drug discovery process, but also the earliest one. It's like, how do you know your disease is actually a disease? And how do you know on which, let's say, genes, proteins, what should you do on this, on the cellular level to treat this disease?
Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast, where you can learn from entrepreneurs and investors who are driving progress in healthcare and life science around the globe. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Alex Merwin from AWS. Today, I welcome Jonathan Batista, the co-founder and CEO of Deep Life, to the show. Deep Life's mission is to build digital twins of cells, highly accurate computational models that can simulate and predict cellular behavior. This allows their customers to virtually test hypotheses and potential therapies to massively de-risk and accelerate research and discovery in the lab. In this conversation, Jonathan shares his unique background, transitioning from aerospace engineering to computational biology. We'll also explore how Deep Life leverages generative AI to map the intricate networks of genes and proteins within cells, helping identify novel therapeutic targets and increasing the reliability of drug candidates by accounting for complex interactions across millions of cells. All right, enough from me. Let's hear from Jonathan. Jonathan Batista, the CEO and co-founder of Deep Life. It's really great to have you with me on the show today. Welcome to the AWS Health Innovation Podcast.
Thank you very much, Alex. Very much looking forward to discuss with you today.
Great. So maybe we can just start. And can you tell us a little bit about what Deep Life does and the problem that you're solving?
Yeah, sure. At Deep Life, we are like a tech bio company. So it's different from a biotech. It's a tech bio company. So we are doing AI to accelerate drug discovery, actually. We created this company in 2019 with my co-founder, Jean-Baptiste Molo, who got a PhD in machine learning applied to genetics. And since then, we have been really focusing on providing tools that will help biologists moving faster in their drug discovery by using digital twin of cells. So what is a digital twin of cells? It's really like a numerical representation of the cells that we leverage to help them testing virtually some experiments that usually they do in a lab. Objective is really to go faster and testing as much hypotheses as we could on a computer before actually going into a lab and discover or make the most important discovery. So we've been working on that for a couple of years now. It's been like 4 years that we have been working on Deep Life. And we're very much looking forward to what is going on in the field since it's moving extremely fast.
Great. And we have a very diverse range of listeners on the show. So we have people who join us who are focused on frontline healthcare innovation in the clinic and the hospital. And then, of course, those focused on R&D and developing new therapeutics and diagnostic technologies. Can you put your technology into context? So how are things done if we're not looking at the cellular level and maybe describing the biology a bit for those who are unfamiliar coming from more of a traditional healthcare background?
I guess probably most of people must know that already now, but like developing a drug is quite like a painful, a very long process, a lot of iteration, a lot of things to do there. There is many steps in developing those drugs. So you have like very early steps. That means understanding the R&D part, understanding your drugs, how it works, the mechanism of action behind. But once you've done that, you have also other steps like going into testing those drugs on animals and going into clinicals and then manufacture these drugs. So this is a huge process from like the idea up to these drugs going into the market and actually treating patients. So what we do at Deep Life is really a very tiny bit of the drug discovery process, but also the earliest one. It's like, how do you know your disease is actually a disease? And how do you know on which, let's say, genes, proteins, what should you do on the cellular level to treat this disease? So it's actually quite a tricky question because most of the time you don't know that. So you have to make tests to actually discover what is going wrong with the cell you are acting on. And what we do at Deep Life is providing biologists like the way to understand those mechanism of action, those, let's say, dysfunction in the cell, but virtually. So you don't need to go into a lab to make those tests. So obviously it's not, we cannot prevent people from going into a lab. It's not something that we can do today already, but there is many ways that we can accelerate or provide evidence on things that could be done to actually change cell behavior. And the good thing with that is, so with DeepLife, we are like a very SaaS company, so we don't really have like a therapeutic area or specific expertise. What we work is really the cellular level. And today, for example, we develop such models, either in drug discovery or let's say in bioproduction, where you can find a way to optimize cells so they can produce more of specific compounds, specific drugs. So it's a very large topic, but the way we start working on it with DeepLife was really at a mechanism. It's really like understand how a cell works. This is really our job at DeepLife.
So Jonathan, you sit at this intersection between computation and biology. And I'm curious, what drew you into technology in the first place? Were you a tinker when you were growing up? Were you really into computers? You know, what inspired you to get involved with biology? What was your path that brought you to founding this company?
So actually, when we have a specific vision at DeepLife, in the sense that we are not typically, let's say, curating disease, we are more providing tools to understand, like a very mechanistic way of understanding biology. And my background actually was before joining and creating DeepLife with my co-founder was really to work actually in the aerospace industry, where we also have like extremely complex systems that we don't understand everything, how everything is moving on it, but we still have simulation tools to evaporate. If you want to build a rocket, it's millions of pieces working all together to make this rocket fly, actually. And we cannot have a full understanding of everything is going on there. But still, we have tools that allow us to have all comprehension of the system and it's a perpetual part of the system and see how this system will evolve, what's going to be its performances according to various, let's say, variation in the parameters. And the objective with DeepLife was to provide exactly the same type of approach to engineer a little bit the cell and understand how we could eventually change small parameters in the cell and see how those parameters could have an effect on the whole cell behavior at the same time. My background is really in that field. This is what has driven the development of DeepLife as well. The only thing is in biology, we don't have laws the same way we have it in mechanics. So we had to infer those laws from data. And this is where actually my co-founder background came in, providing a little bit more, let's say, AI approaches to infer laws from specific sequencing data to make those systems work. And DeepLife today has been created based on those two backgrounds.
So Jonathan, I want you to say a little bit more about this connection to aerospace. So it's remarkable to me that we take this for granted every time we jump onto a plane. It's pretty crazy that we're going up 30,000 plus feet in the air, trusting our life to this giant, heavy steel machine that could be instant death at any point, but of course we're fine. And you mentioned that we don't have the models in biology. And can you say a little bit more to that, just the complexity of biology and the real need to bring technologies like machine learning to help elicit meaningful patterns and interaction and help improve how we create predictions from these complex systems?
Actually, if you look at biology and aerospace, there is one common thing in both is if you are missing information about the law or how our system works, actually you still have experience. People are making a plane fly for a couple, let's say, decades now. And as long as you are following, let's say, rules that are similar, your plane going to fly. I don't know how long, but it's going to fly anyway. And regarding drugs, a little bit almost the same thing. People have been treating a patient with some specific drugs. We know they are working and actually the one that we are using now and it's quite useful. But the only thing is in biology now, really what people say is all the low hanging fruit in terms of drugs, all the drugs that are efficient on patients and we can find quite easily has already been found. So now it's more, let's say, going into either precision medicine or really specific drugs to treat more, let's say, complicated disease. And for those one, just relying on, let's say, a random discovery will probably won't work. And this is where you need to have a better understanding of what you do. But it's not that, it's not it. If you look at what is going on in the aerospace fields, what's changed is by having such tools, it's actually the maturity of the technologies that you are leveraging. As soon as you put engineers starting working on the specific topics, even if the discovery is not new, what you bring is a reliability. And I think today with drugs that we are having, discovering new drug is good, but having reliability on those drugs is even more important. Meaning like making sure that the drug, even if it's working, it's harmless. Meaning like there is no toxic effects, there is no side effects, there is no such things. And this is things that are extremely complicated to discover. In your body, you have more than 500 different type of cells working together. And when you develop a drug, if you take it orally, the drug can go almost everywhere. So you need to be sure that the drug is actually affecting the right cell, not the wrong cells, which is very complicated. And in each of those cells, you have 20,000 genes plus all the proteins going with it and everything. So it's a very complex system, and it's thousands of all complex systems working together. So obviously, if cells was like a rocket and you have like millions of rockets working together in the same tissue. So that makes biology extremely complex. That's why I think when we started the company with Jean-Baptiste, the objective was saying, okay, this is not something that we can do humanly, and it should not be done by a human. The best way to move forward is actually to have the assistance of, say, a machine to help us understand the complexity of not only one cell, but actually the communication of all those cells together to make our body what it is today.
Great. So let's talk a little bit more about the data that you use to inform the models, because the classic trope in analytics is garbage in, garbage out. But when you apply this to machine learning, it's even more true. So can you tell us a little bit about how you source the data that inform deep life's models?
So there is many data to go in there. So there is like a lot of data that we can integrate. Obviously, the quality of the data is very important. What we were looking at was first to look at what information could we find in the literature. It's like a lot of information in the literature. People have made experiments for like centuries. So it's basically like a huge amount of knowledge data out there. The only thing is when you look at only literature, you have a bias. Each experience is a little bit biased. The conclusion of the experiment is also biased. So it's very complicated to make a system work directly based on this. So what we were working on with DeepLife was to integrate another type of data that is measuring cell activity directly. And it's called a sequencing data, RNA sequencing. It's actually how do you measure biological activity within a cell, gene per gene, and try to extract this in, say, like a specific tissue or specific organs. And we collect this information quite broadly. So for example, today, when you are like a researcher and you have to publish a paper on biology, usually you publish also the sequencing data associated with the paper. So we had the one first axis was to collect those data from public repositories where people are actually providing like data they use to publish the paper. We also add on top of this data that come from some of our partners. So we are working on a very specific project with universities across the globe where we can collect also such data, and there is like more to come. But in any way, regardless the way we collect the data, there is still the same question. Indeed, like the data that you put in are garbage in, garbage out, indeed. And the biggest effort that we had to do at DeepLife actually was not to develop the models. This is a good effort, but what the biggest effort was to actually harmonize and curate the data that we use within DeepLife. And over the 4 years that DeepLife has been existing, we almost spent 2 years just developing pipeline to curate at very large scales all the data that are available out there. It's biomolecular data collected at a single cell level that we have agglomerated, and pipeline are quite consequent. So it's pipeline where we can actually process, harmonize, make sure everyone put the same annotation on every cells and collect millions and millions of cells and align them with the same quality. So I don't have specifically the ratio, but it's huge between the data that we collect and the one that we keep. I'm not even sure we keep at the end 50% of the data that has been collected. So it was like a major selection that is done to make sure that we can use the data. And it's not as easy as that neither, because regarding the pipelines that you use, not all the data are working the same. But to keep it quite broad, quality of the data is indeed what is making things working or not working. Definitely one of our biggest challenges was that, and we spend quite a lot of time to make it work correctly.
So it's not just where you source the data, where you're getting it from. It's the processes that you're applying on top of that data to harmonize, clean it, and prepare it for processing that is part of your core IP. And I'm always curious to talk with founding teams about what are the enabling technologies or ecosystem shifts that make this the right time for your company. So those 2 years of development, were there any key technologies that you used, or why was now the time when really this deep and nuanced and detailed view of the cell was possible in silico with what you've developed?
Just regarding data, going back on the data as well. So obviously the data is available out there, but what is even more important is to understand what the data is covering actually. So you have a lot of data that are available, but what is actually extremely important is to also have a mapping of the data. So what, actually, this is the first thing that we did is like having a mapping of all available data that are actually online in public repositories and see where, in which therapeutic area we got the most and the better quality. And this is actually what is driving a drug discovery. For example, we could say, okay, in that specific therapeutic area, we know there is enough data to start a project almost from scratch for this one. We need to generate data. And this is also giving like a lot of, let's say, where to move forward, because we know on which project we need to generate novel data. So it's going to be a longer project, or in which one we can start right away with a good quality. And this is also, it's linked with the technology that we leverage, in a sense that we made our first actually progress working from using this strategy and moving on very specific therapeutic areas that way. But obviously, the past year, we had a lot of progress has been done specifically on generative AI and how this could be applied, for example, to text, let's say text-oriented data or images. So this is a place where things have moved quite fast. And more recently, similar progress has been done on sequencing data. So data that are measuring cell activity. And it is where deep life lies, actually. It's using that specific type of technology to generate cell states or simulate cell states after several perturbation. And we actually are using all of this generative AI, let's say improvement recently has drastically improved our capacity to deliver just as well as everything based on text to create or make sure that annotation at each data sample level is good. Yeah, it's moving quite fast and we are taking advantage also of it. We are developing our own method as well, but obviously major progress in the public area has been very helpful as well.
So it sounds like you're experimenting with transformer models and how they could be deployed in improving your core product. But I'm curious if you have any early learnings on where traditional deep learning or non-generative AI techniques are still delivering the best results for you and where you've seen generative AI technology really be a force multiplier and change the way you do things.
Let's say most of the time you collect data at a simple level. So for example, you collect data on a patient and you want to test, let's say, what's going to be the effect of a specific drug on those data. So let's say, for example, you have collected like a bunch of cells on a patient and this patient is, let's say, having a specific disease, whatever the disease is. And you want to try one specific drug to see if this disease could eventually reverse the state of those cells to unhealthy states using those specific perturbation. So it's basically, okay, I have a disease cell. I want to try like a drug and see if I can take this cell back to, let's say, a normal state. So what can you do? Usually you go into a lab, you select specific cell lines that kind of represent your like a in vitro model for your cell and you try various drugs. And then once you got this information or you got this first result, you try to see how this could link to a cell from a patient or you go to the literature and see which drugs might work best on similar patients. But what we provide with generative AI approach is like the same as if you were trying to generate an image. What does my cell looks like if I apply these specific drugs on a disease state? And I would like to see what looks like my cell after that. So looks like gene per gene, how those genes should evolve. So basically that type of generation, that type of approaches, you need to have like extremely good predictive power to do this. And it's extremely important because we have several thousand type of genes that we want to simulate. And this works exactly as, let's say, like a small image. And we want to do this for several cell types at the same time. So you need to adapt those models to such effort. So that was one of the first things that we had to do. And now there are several techniques to do this. Cannot go in too much detail about this, but there are several techniques to do this. But one of the most important is actually to be able to benchmark those methods and see which one is the best for various tasks that you would like to address. So at DeepLife, we are working very early in drug discovery, meaning that we are not simulating, let's say, patient cells, but we are more looking at, okay, what should be the best therapeutic targets for this specific cell type in that specific condition, or eventually to identify some very specific biomarkers, or eventually to just see if a drug that we already know could be repurposed on one other type of disease. So we know, for example, the effect of a drug on one specific disease for one specific cells and see if this could work on another disease. And for each of those tasks, all the methods don't perform exactly the same. So there is like traditional methods, there is generative approach methods, there is several ways to do it. And our job is to compare all those methods and make sure that we can use the best one to move forward. The job is complex, not always based on generative AI, but what we are seeing so far is that those approaches using the generative AI today tends to become quite good on very specific use case.
That's great. And sometimes I've been inclined to use the term participatory AI instead of generative AI, because of course your technology is generating cell variants that can be useful in research, but by generating that data and accelerating the discovery process for an early stage biotech or pharma R&D team, you're enabling them to change their investigative technique and research question and adapt the approach in real time. So it's almost the researcher asking the question is in relationship with the AI and working with it to advance discovery and science. And I'd love to hear, like, how do customers work with you today? Well, you've built out this really well-defined characterization of many different cell types. How does a researcher activate and actually use that in their day-to-day work?
So it's funny, I like to call it like collaborative AI as well, in a sense that what we have to do is to generate a new hypothesis. So the issue with that type of model is like quite complicated to explain what is going on behind. So, and in there is many fields where it's not so much a big deal. For example, if I generating like you ask to have a new image of a cat with a hat, for example, you ask your generative algorithm to just create like an image of a cat with a hat. If you see a cat with a hat, you are mostly happy because you already got it. In biology, when we simulate cells, I tell you I want a B cell with a perturbation of gene state 1, for example. I'm not quite sure anyone here will be able to tell me what does this cell looks like at the end. It's quite complicated to see what is going on there. And we cannot explain. We cannot explain it easily. What we did at DeepLife is moving a little bit differently. This kind of generative part, generate hypotheses, and the whole objective is to take those hypotheses and test them or make sure that it makes sense. So actually we have those two parts. One is generating hypotheses. The other one is validating in silico hypotheses. And you have many ways to validate those hypotheses based on actual literature, based on actual how mechanistically speaking, when you activate or deactivate some specific or inhibit some specific gene within a cell, how this involves the activation or inhibition of other genes and this cascade of interaction within the cell. This is something that a lot of experts knows very well. And once you activate it and you show how this drives the rest of the activity, like kind of a causal analysis on the cell, it's extremely powerful as well to give you like a rationale about why this prediction might be good or not. So this is a really like a collaboration. So today, for example, we have developed a platform where we work with our partners on this. So we generate hypotheses with, let's say, the generative approach. And then we let them explore the cell directly from our product, where they almost like a Google map of the cell, where people can explore the cell and see if the predictions that we do make sense or not, and what hypothesis, what evidence in the literature can support eventually those generation. Sometimes we find something very, let's say, uncommon. For example, we've been running not far from here, like a specific project on lupus, where we could find very interesting, let's say, targets that was already identified to treat this disease. And our approach was able to find back those specific targets, but we also been able to find novel targets where apparently no papers was related to it within lupus, but the mechanism of action behind the target was actually known on other type of disease or other type of approach. And it was extremely interesting that our algorithm was able to find back those type of targets. Once again, it's a collaborative approach, meaning for the moment, I'm not aware about any software that can actually give you the target right away and tell you this is the one that you have to use and that's it. But there is a way to generate hypotheses where there is a kind of a statu quo, meaning people cannot find something else. And I think this is what is extremely powerful with those type of method is like almost like you start from a blank page or you need to have a template email to be sent. Better than what you can use usually. And this is almost what we are doing with the platform, providing hypotheses that you can validate, make your own rationally, and then go into a lab and test it and make it to see if it makes sense. And it is extremely important because I think it's going to be the next way to go beyond the low-hanging fruit we were talking about earlier in drug discovery.
Earlier, we were talking about aerospace and autopilot works quite well. I'm so glad that people are there to make sure that the plane lands. But the physics of how a plane flies are understood well enough that we can characterize the motion with algorithms that are durable, robust, and predictable. And now we can travel around the world and take it for granted, which is an incredible thing. We don't have that level of understanding for biology for the reasons you talked about earlier in this conversation. So the software and the algorithm doesn't exist to just say this is the target because of that gap. And what excites me about your technology is it enables a researcher who spends their life becoming an expert within a disease area, but can't possibly hold in their mind all the detail that could matter when it comes to a mechanism of action. And it gives them a powerful tool, like a pivot table of the mind, to tap in and really see the biology in a much more detailed way to unlock insight for the researcher to be able to advance their understanding of the disease and to identify new targets. So it's hugely exciting. I'm curious, what's your ambition for the next few years? When we're getting together in 3-5 years time, what are your goals? What do you want to see Deep Life accomplish next?
Extremely interesting. We have many things to do. Like, biology is mainly unexplored. I don't know if we reach like the 10% of discovery of how a cell is working. I'm not even sure, but it's mainly unexplored. And what we are doing today is building this platform so to also be able to gather all those knowledge at one same place, generate at the same place potential novel hypotheses based on actually all the information that we already have generated, like all what humans has developed, both in literature, but as well, let's say, in data that has been measured at a cellular level, to see up to where we could go and generate all the hypotheses that actually should have been generated if we had this kind of a global overview. But this is only working at a cell level. And cell is, as mentioned before, we have 300 of cells within our body, and we are working only on one cell. And you cannot cure someone with one cell. It's not the way it works. You have to take into consideration the full body. But hopefully there is new technology also coming up, so we can actually start talking about not only generating one cell, but also generating, let's say, tissue response. It's not something that we can do right now, but it's things where if you think about it a bit broadly, you should be able to assemble those cells like Lego together and then generate tissue or why not organs. And at some point, going back to the full body. So it's going to be like, I'm dreaming a little bit far away from here, but it's definitely the way we see stuff, like all the cells being pieces of the whole body or small tissue and connecting them all together, taking into consideration the interaction that we have between the various cells type within the body and see how things move forward. So it's like an extremely exciting journey to really build like a human body as you were building like a full rocket by assembling all the small parts. The only thing that we had to do to go back is to understand how each of those small parts are actually working together and are working alone. And that is the journey that we are following up so far with Deep Life.
So Jonathan, you've been on this journey for 4 years, and if you could go back in a time machine and give yourself a little bit of advice at the beginning, what would you tell yourself? Because we have a lot of people who listen to the show that are incubating an idea, they're thinking about trying to make a dent in the universe here. We can ring fence it to your area of expertise, right, within life sciences, R&D. But what advice would you give to fellow entrepreneurs who are earlier in the journey?
It's not easy. I'm not sure my journey of entrepreneur is already done, and if I can give the best advice here. But if I had to go back and tell to myself something, I would probably say to myself, Jonathan, don't hesitate to make mistakes. I think there is many mistakes actually that we are probably doing now that I would actually been happy to do, let's say, 2 years before, something like this. Mm-hmm. And specifically in our field where no one were doing that 4 years ago, most of people were thinking like what we do at Deep Life was like make no sense, or we cannot do anything in biology because biology is too complex. So when you discuss with biologists, most of the time they say it's too complex, it was not possible to do anything. Now with generative AI approach, people start to get a little bit more, let's say, comfortable with those ideas. But what I would have done differently if I would have advised myself to do is like just going straight, make a mistakes eventually, or make mistakes even if we already have done some, and just see how to get the feedback from those guys. I think it's very important to confront the technology, to confront the product that you are developing with your end user as fast as you can, even if it's not good, because you still have some time to develop stuff after. But having like, instead of looking for the perfect fit for your solution, just sending away, try it, get a lot of eventually bad feedbacks or bad, like, let's say non-user people that think they're still missing, because I think those feedbacks could actually help you move faster in the right direction. So if I had to do it again, I would probably do that a little bit this way to move faster and collect those feedback. For me, actually, like a bad feedback or like someone say, okay, I think your solution is not good enough for me, it's actually like an excellent feedback, actually, because you know exactly what you need to change, rather than having someone telling you this is perfect or this is good, where you actually, if it's good, you don't have to change anything. But when you're young and when you're starting a company, it's very unlikely that you that's what you have developed at first place is the right thing. So my advice would be really like, do not hesitate to make mistakes and do it as fast and learn as fast as you can doing those mistakes.
Those are great tips. So Jonathan Batista, the co-founder and CEO of DeepLive, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks for joining us today for the AWS Health Innovation Podcast. If you want to get in touch with AWS, please check out our show notes where you can find a link. If you enjoy the podcast, the best way to support us is to share it with your colleagues and friends. We also really appreciate your reviews and ratings wherever you listen to podcasts. We love hearing feedback from our listeners, so please don't hesitate to get in touch. Again, you'll find all the details in our show notes. See you next week.